Welcome back to another episode of CyberStar Talks podcast. I am Ayona. As always, I am so thrilled you're spending your precious time with me and my honored guest. Gabriel Botwell is a penetration tester at Desjardins, the largest financial cooperative in North America. With a deep focus on the banking industry, Gabriel specializes in exploring mobile applications and APIs. Gabriel is an avid blog writer who advocates for access to education for all. In addition, she has a large following in social media where she shares many educational resources about technical trainings and many other cyber topics. She actively contributes to various organizations as a member of their advisory board. She's a speaker and trainer at global events and prestigious universities like Black Hat, API Secure, API Days, B-Sides, OVASP, and Toronto University. With her contributions to the community, Gabriel has been the recipient of multiple prestigious awards. Among them, she was honored as one of the top 20 women in cybersecurity in Canada, Pentest Ninja, Educator of the Year, Top Influencer in Cybersecurity by IFSEC Global, and Woman Hacker of the Year. Gabrielle, a warm welcome to CyberStar Talks podcast. I'm glad to have you here today.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Gabrielle, what has been your experience navigating the male-dominated ethical hacking world? What does it take for a young woman new to cybersecurity field to become a penetration tester?
So about being a woman in a male-dominated area, I would say it has been all right so far. It's true that I have always been the only woman of the team all my pen testing years. And even when I was training as a developer, we were only two women in the training. Yeah, all the time I'm used to be the only woman. And of course, it's not always easy because it's not always welcoming and you can sometimes feel uncomfortable. Because even if people are trying to make this better, and I can see the difference and I can see it's getting better, sometimes there's also unconscious bias and it's not always easy, I would say. I do feel like things are changing and people are trying to be more careful. And also a lot of companies now they promote diversity. So this also helped normalizing this. And I also recently saw that some companies actually do training to their executives in order to help them fight their unconscious bias. So I feel like if we continue like this, we can definitely make it better. What do you need to do to become a pen tester? I would say that you have to be persistent and creative because, you know, sometimes we are going to attack targets. And it's not always straightforward, even though people, it can feel like that when you're saying this from the outside, because there's a lot of exploits available online and everything, but you definitely need to be creative and find ways to attack. Yeah, you know, this is really the spirit, think out of the box. And also, you also need to be able to explain simply complex topics. And to have good writing skills because of the report you are going to do at the end.
And, right, so effective communication skills will definitely enhance your overall proficiency as a pen tester, I guess, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Gabriel, why do you think many women hesitate to apply for penetration tester jobs? And what strategies or initiatives do you believe can help create a more inclusive and diverse environment to encourage women participation in this field?
I think women hesitate because the industry is still not welcoming enough to them. And also because we need to stop educating girls the way we do, which means that women can be technical and women do not have to go to jobs that are made for women. You know, the bias we have in a society. Women can do any career they want to do. We see more and more training opportunities for women. So I think this is a great way to bring more women in the field. Also companies should implement diversities and inclusion policies. like establishing and you know communicating clear policies on diversity and inclusion, it can really help to create a more inclusive culture. Like for example, in my current company, there's committee for GLBTQ plus people, and so it's really helpful because we feel like we are not alone, and and there's also a woman committee, so there are also trainings for women where they will help you. Like I did a training, for example, to work on my leadership. And so we have a woman committee that has training for leadership. So every year they do this leadership training, which is really good and really helpful. And so I think that's a good way to help women go further and to
Right.
help break the glass ceiling and everything.
Yeah, and break the biases. Well, I would say that it is also very important to highlight and celebrate the achievements of women in penetration testing world through industry events, conferences, and online platforms. Because by showcasing their expertise, we can inspire and encourage more women to consider pursuing careers in this field.
Yeah, exactly. And like you have, for example, Cybersecurity Woman of the Year contest that is made by Carmen Marsh, which is
Absolutely.
amazing. And she's doing a great job, and it's rewarding for us as women. And it's
Absolutely.
also important for other women or girls to see that it's possible.
That's really a great initiative. Can you walk us through the most important phases of penetration testing and the most popular penetration testing tools?
Yeah, of course. So when we start a pen test engagement, we do not go straight to the attack phase because we need to plan it with the customer. So I'm going to say customer, but depending on which company you work for instance, if you are doing the security internally for the company, it's going to be more project-based than customer-based. But if you're working on a consulting company, then you will work with customers. But all this phase of planning is mostly going to take care of legal matters and defining the scope and everything. So this works more on the part of consulting, because when you go to the intern of a company and when you do the internal security, all the legal matters are already taken care of during the hiring process. But we still do have to define the scope. So there's still a planning phase, but it's only going to be about the scope. And so then there is another phase where we gather information about the target, like how does it work, what are the technologies that are used. And so this is going to be the discovery phase. And then there is the attack phase where you are going to attack the target, and you will have to take many notes in the process and also gather proof of what you were able to exploit, because this is going to be very important for the final reporting phase. And finally, so we are going to produce a report with explanation on how to reproduce the flow and how to correct it. And so that's pretty much it for the different phases. And for the tools, for example, we would use for web pen tests, we will use web proxies. So this would be tools like Burp Suite or OWASP DAP. So these tools are going to allow you to, when a request is sent to a server and when you get the response from the server, you are going to be able to intercept, like you're going to basically to be in the middle of this.
Right.
And so if you send a request from your browser, it's going to be sent to your proxy before going to be, well, in a way, because you're putting your way in the middle of this. And so this way, you can change what is sent. You can really have a more broad view of what's happening, and you can go more into details. You can repeat requests, and you can change many things. So it's a really good way to find vulnerabilities. Also, we have what we call fuzzers. So these are tools that will help you for enumeration or for brute force. So the name of tools like this would be Burp Suite Intruder that had this possibility, or you also have GoBuster, which is a tool that is only a fuzzer. And then we can use also attack frameworks. So these are typically a collection of tools, techniques, and also procedures. And so they will help us simulate real-world attack. So they will provide, you know, a structured way to reconnaissance, for vulnerability identification and exploitation. And so a very famous one is Metasploit. But you have to, like, for attack frameworks, you also need to be able to understand what you do. Like, it's for every tool, you need to be able to understand what you do. So these tools are really a way for you to gain time. Because often we hear people say pen tester, they don't really do much. They have all these tools and everything. So I always like to say tools are help, but you need to use
in the right way.
Yeah.
Gabrielle, do you see new AI-powered tools emerging in the area of penetration testing to help automate and streamline the exploitation process?
Yeah, actually, I saw a few tools like this. There was one that is, so the tool I mentioned called Burp Suite has the possibility you can, if you're a developer and if you like developing tools, or if you need, you know, some specific features and you don't find them, you can add extensions to Burp Suite. And so there is, I found a tool that was using ChatGPT for web. And so it was, I did not try it because it required a paid account of ChatGPT, and also because I don't trust it with customer data, because customer data is very sensitive, and we don't really know yet what is going to happen with the data we share with those AI systems. I went to a conference in New York a few weeks ago, API Days conference. Mm-hmm. And there was this amazing talk about someone who made an API with ChatGPT. And he was wondering if the API would be secured by design. Like, mm-hmm. He asked ChatGPT to make an API, and turned out that by design, the first answer of ChatGPT was not secure at all. So
wow.
you cannot rely on this. But of course, he was able to secure it after by asking, okay, so this part of the code is not secure. Can you make it better? And so this talk is really interesting. I think it's going to be available online for people who will want to watch it.
Well, it's really interesting, and we just have to wait and see how this all gonna play out, right?
Yeah, I think we have to, but it's like everything, something new emerged, we really have to take a step back and see and try it out, and just to make sure that it's reliable.
Gabrielle, when conducting a penetration test, what steps do you take to ensure that your actions do not cause any unintended harm or disruption to the target system or organization? Which types of penetration testings are usually conducted in live, and which ones in test environments?
Most of the time, when there's disruption, it does not happen really often, because you know, we are very careful, and it's also not always that easy to disrupt an application. But if you use automatic vulnerability scanner that are not properly configured, this can indeed disrupt the application. So it's very important to be careful with this. It rarely happens, but it is one of the things that customers are worried about the most. So I always take very good care, and I try to most of the time avoid, when we test in production, avoid automatic tools that would might you know, send a lot of requests. If it's a web, for example, if it's a web application I'm testing, if this is a tool that sends a lot of requests at the same time, I really try to be very, very careful with this. And also, one important thing is that when we pen test, it's really important to test in an environment that is really close to the production environment. So sometimes it's not possible to test in production because it's going to be a really sensitive target. And so in this case, we try to have an environment that is the closest to the production. Because if you test, you have to make sure that the vulnerabilities you find and also the vulnerabilities that you don't find are not going to be in the production environment. So that's why it's better to test in an environment that is exactly the same, because sometimes there can be variation between environments, and so it's important to be sure that it's very, very close to what it's going to what is going to actually be live.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, to succeed as a penetration tester, a deep understanding of human vulnerabilities and ability to think like a hacker are crucial. Can you provide us with some insights into specific aspects of human psychology that hackers commonly exploit for their purposes?
Yeah, so often hackers are going to use social engineering techniques to manipulate human behavior and to gain unauthorized access, for example. So this includes a technique, for example, like phishing emails or baiting or impersonation. And so these will try to use trust or to, you know, to...
authority maybe sometimes, right? Or
yeah,
fear or urgency.
Yeah, exactly. These emotions of urgency and fear, it's really, really important, because it will pressure people to make hasty decisions. So,
right.
For example, they can, you know, impersonate like, I'm your boss, and if you don't do this right now, you're going to be fired. So this is a real good example of this. And so we see this a lot in phishing emails, for example, or for, you know, send a wire transfer to this person because it's really important. And so... humans also will use, sometimes we'll have a tendency to use a weak password. So also this is something that could be taken advantage of. A good example of this is when you do a physical pen test, like a physical intrusion.
Right, like tailgating or piggybacking, right?
Yeah, and this is really an interesting part of pen test. And so I had the opportunity once to do a physical intrusion, and it was an amazing experience. So there's this whole phase that is the reconnaissance phase, and we are going to go around the building, and we can do also check the Google map of the place and see. But the fun part was to go there and check around the building and see what we could try out. So there was doors for access with people who had a wheelchair. And there was a gap between the floor and the back of the door. So we were able to actually slide from under the door to get in. And then we were lucky in a way, because the door behind these doors were open and not locked. And so we were able
to... It was
to,
a vulnerability.
Yeah. And so we were able to get into the building, and when we went out, we used the principal way out, and so we had people there, and so we had to manipulate them into believing that we were legitimately here. So it was really using human psychology for this, and it was I remember talking with my colleague, and we said the biggest is the lie, the easiest is going to be to make it work.
Unfortunately, yes. So let's say it is crucial to cultivate a security conscious mindset and develop a habit of verifying everything, like double checking the resources and maintaining a healthy skepticism toward unsolicited or suspicious communications.
Yeah, definitely. You have to be very careful. Every time when I receive an email, for example, if there's like a PDF attached to it or any attachment, I'm going to check first, like if I know the sender, if I was expecting this document. And if I have a doubt, I will ask to the person straight away, because sometimes you can impersonate people as well. So you have to be careful with this. I think phishing email and they are getting more and more sophisticated, so it's harder the way things goes. It's getting really hard to
Absolutely.
actually detect them. So
even for people who have a technical background, sometimes it's really hard to
and even
identify.
for people who work in cybersecurity, it's crazy.
Absolutely. It is.
Yeah.
What are some golden rules you follow before installing apps in your private devices? So, do you perform a penetration test prior to installing them on your device?
So I cannot perform a pen test because this is I have to have the authorization before testing something. But there are things I can do, like I will check the reviews. For example, if it's an app on a phone, I will check the reviews online. This does not always work, unfortunately, because there was, for example, this application on the Google App Store, and it was installed by many, many, many people, and it was a malware. And it was subscribing people to paid things without their without them being aware of this. But what I also do that can help avoid this is to check the permissions it asks for. And so you can find this, for example, in the Google Play Store. You can find this in the description of the app. It will say this app will ask for this permission, and this permission. So this way, if I feel like it's an app for pictures and it asks access to your camera, it's okay. But if it's going to ask to record something, or then I'm not going to install this because I feel like it's not supposed to use this. So this is really logic. So anyone can do this. It's really logical.
And also maybe verify the app source, right? So downloading apps only from trusted sources, such as official app stores, let's say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, totally.
Gabriel, what are the privilege escalation attacks, and how can we prevent or mitigate them?
So when you get initial foothold in a system or a network, and so if you have a user that does not have the admin rights, you will need to try some attacks to get more privilege. So this is what privilege escalation attacks are. And so to prevent or mitigate them, it's important to keep the operating systems and application up to date with the latest security patches and the latest updates, because this will address vulnerabilities that are documented on the internet, for example. Or just vulnerabilities that arise. And so this is why sometimes when we have critical vulnerabilities that are discovered, vendors are going to push patches very, very quickly. So this way, it's really important to update or to patch when there's a patch. Also, what's important is to implement a very good access management, like using the principle of least privilege, for example. So this would grant users and processes the minimum level of permission only to what is necessary to perform the task they need to perform. So this would limit the impact of privilege escalation. So if you have an attacker that gains access to a lower level of privilege, if the user cannot do anything, it's really going to help to avoid privilege escalation. And also use strong and unique passwords, use MFA, multi-factor authentication, and also use password managers. This would help. And change password. Don't use the same password for every services. Don't use default password as well, because it's really easy to find online what the default password are.
And maybe do a good network segmentation as well.
Yeah, exactly. And this will restrict lateral movement in the network, because you're going to divide your network in separate segments, and so you can limit like an attacker will not be able to escalate if it's really well done. Sometimes people or project or customer will want us to check if the network segmentation is well done, because it's really an efficient measure to avoid some vulnerabilities. and also to avoid propagation of a hacker in the network. So yeah, it's definitely important. And then also you, of course, have all these systems that will help you find if you have, that will help you detect intrusion. And of course, you know, you have to audit your systems very often because this is definitely helping because technologies evolves very fast. So you really have to have regular security audits. And awareness, as we talked before, awareness is essential.
Absolutely. Buffer overflows are also a common type of security vulnerability, particularly in legacy code or code which is not written with security in mind. How can we prevent or minimize them?
So this vulnerability happens when a program is able to write data beyond the allocated memory buffer. So this would allow an attacker to overwrite adjacent memory and execute arbitrary code. So to prevent it, there's secure coding practice, and it's getting more and more used, which is good, which I love, because these techniques are going to check for proper input validation and that, you know, making sure that buffers are not overflowed and that the bounds are properly set up. So this really helps a lot. And also sometimes if you use a specific programming language, some language are going to help prevent buffer overflows by design. Also, input validation does not only work for buffer overflow. Like for example, in a web application, it's going to help a lot of vulnerabilities. If you check that the input is on the expected formats and limits, it will definitely help a lot of things. Because for example, on a web application, if you have an input where you are able to put anything you want, if it's not checked properly, you can try for SQL injection, you can try for cross-site scripting. And so this is definitely helpful to make sure every time you leave a door open to make sure that what gets in is what you are expecting and nothing else.
Communication is another crucial component in penetration testing. How do you approach communication reporting when conveying findings and recommendations to non-technical stakeholders?
This is exactly what I was saying when I was talking about the way we need to be able to explain simply complex topics. This is when we are going to have to be able to do this. So what I do is I try to use practical examples. You know, I often understand the concept better when it's compared to real life. So yes. When I explain something, I'm going to try to use, I don't know, a pool or a cup of tea or something, you know, to have something that is real life. And this way, I think it's way easier to understand. And also what I do and that really helps the people of the project or the customers understand is I focus on the impact it can have on the organization. Like this vulnerability can help the attacker to exfiltrate data. So, and what's really helpful for this specific thing is threat modeling. Sometimes at my company, we try to do it to all of our projects because it really is helpful for a pen test. So before the pen test, the threat modeling team is going to have a talk with the project, and in order to be able to modelize every threat that could happen to this specific project. And so this way, they will make a documentation that is a list of the different possible threats. And this way we can focus on different impact it can have. And so this application is using customer data. So we have to be careful that it is not possible to exfiltrate this data. So this is really important. And also this, when we are able to do something, this also help us explain, okay, so this vulnerability had this impact. And as you can see, in the threat modeling phase, we mentioned that it could have this impact. So this is more visual and this is more practical to explain, in my opinion. And also what I do during a call when I present the report, I always make sure that all questions are answered, and I always try to have an attitude that is, you know, open and okay. I mean, if you have any questions, there are no stupid questions, and please feel free to ask all of them, because it's in our interest for everyone to make this
Absolutely.
application better.
So the key takeaways are: understand the audience, use plain language, focus on impact and relevance, visualize data and metrics, and provide actionable recommendations. Absolutely very helpful for people who are working in this area to make their communication better. Gabrielle, it was an absolute pleasure chatting with you today. Thank you so much for your time, for the insights you shared with the audience, and for the invaluable contribution you give to our community every day. You're a true role model to follow.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. It was nice to talk with you.
Thank you for listening to CyberStar Talks podcast. If you like what you heard, please follow us, leave a review, and tune in monthly for the upcoming episodes.